Hello, friends. It's the Environment Show, and welcome. Brazil's Environment Minister, José Lutzenberger, our special guest this time, he says we have made progress in what we do, but not so much in how we think. Also this time, the first off-the-grid day. Organizer John Schaefer says it's time to take Earth Day one step further.
We get new products in the mail every day, the environmentally safe socks, and it tend to get a little cynical about the selling of the green movement, the hyping of the green movement. But we're trying to say, okay, Earth Day is over, Off the Grid Day is here. What can we really do now that we've done the 50 simple things? Let's get into those hundreds of more complex things that we can do to really have an effect on this country's energy policies and make a lasting effect on the planet.
The issue of a low-level radioactive waste dump between Nebraska and South Dakota. These stories this time on The Environment Show. We hope you'll stay tuned. The Environment Show is a national production made possible by the J.M. Kaplan Fund of New York. And this is Bruce Robertson. 64-year-old José Antonio Lutzenberger is a philosophic man with some tender thoughts about the earth. He is also an irritated politician, angry and frustrated with bureaucracy. Environmentalists know Lutzenberger as one of the leading thinkers of our time. In Brazil, he is known also as the Minister for the Environment. He was brought into the new administration of President Fernando Collor de Mello to design and enforce a governmental strategy for saving the tropical rainforests being cut and burned at a catastrophic rate. Lutzenberger says 1987 was the worst year for destruction of tropical rainforests. That year alone, 90,000 square kilometers were cleared, the size of Portugal. He was convinced then that if nothing changed, the tropical rainforests would all be gone by 2020.
The last figures that are now in, and that is for the year 1990, last year, show us that last year, 13,000 square kilometers were cleared. 13,000. That is about 80% less. It is still very bad, but compared to what it was in 87, it is progress. And this year, we expect it to be below 8,000 square kilometers, and let's hope that in the next 5 or 6 years, we'll be down to closer to zero. So there has been a total reversal in the devastation of the rainforest. Today, I'm convinced that we will probably be able to save about 80% of the original rainforest, because what has been destroyed until now is about 10%.
Lutzenberger says though the rate of clearing has slowed, the problem remains that much of the clearing is being done by fire. Lutzenberger, born of German immigrant parents in southern Brazil, says this burning may be more symbolic than functional.
That is a very serious problem all over South America, and even in the Spanish-speaking, even in Spain itself. This is part of our culture. Unfortunately, the Latin American people, and it is not true that they got that from the Indians. No, it came from the peninsula. It probably is a Muslim influence. They cannot see dry vegetation without setting fire to it. It is considered almost something patriotic to clean the landscape, you see. This is another very serious problem. We cannot allow this to continue for very much longer, but it is a cultural problem. It is so ingrained in the people that even 2 weeks ago I had a very serious discussion with the city administration of Brasilia. They published in the papers that they were going to fine the owners of lots that did not eliminate wild vegetation from them. So many people immediately set fire to it. This will take us many, many years to change because we have to re-educate the people, you see. But it is as bad in Brazil as it is in Venezuela, in Colombia, in Bolivia, even in Argentina and Uruguay. And where I live in the south of Brazil, where burning was almost unknown except the burning of grassland on the ranches, it has become a terrible problem lately.
Mr. Lutzenberger, as catastrophic as the loss of this ecosystem would be, it is, in fact, symptomatic of greater problems, the greatest of all, namely how we view the Earth as our only home. Perhaps you can share with us some of your deeper philosophical perspectives on this.
Oh, yes. What is happening in the last wildernesses in South America, in Africa, in Asia, in Australia, is only a reflection of what modern industrial society as a whole is doing to the planet. Modern industrial society, which is based on an anthropocentric view of the world that we got from our remote Judeo-Christian past, looks at the planet and sees only resources. At best, we see the planet as a spaceship full of raw materials that we can use, and of course we have to take care of it, but essentially it is seen as something that is there for us to consume. And this comes from Genesis, where, as the Bible says, everything was given to man for his use. Either we find a new way of looking at the world, or we will really turn the last stone and we will destroy everything. That is why we, and when I say we now, I mean we Brazilians, and I convinced our president that this is what we want for 1992, we are talking to the other governments with the intention of seeing how we can get everybody to take discussions in 1992 in a direction where we really look in depth at the real causes of mankind's predicament today. If modern industrial society is now destroying the planet at a growing rate, we must see why. Why is that so? It is because of the way we look at it and because of our economic thinking. So we must address these fundamental questions. Otherwise, we would be looking for technical fixes such as more filters in our chimneys and more catalysts for our cars and a few more forest reserves and genetic banks, as some like to call it. Or to use a metaphor, we would be looking for new brands of aspirin for a headache that is getting worse all the time without addressing the real cause, the disease that is causing that headache. So we must rethink our attitudes. We must re-examine what we mean by progress. What do we mean by development? We must re-examine the basic tenets of our economic thinking. And if this does not happen in 1992, then it would really be the loss of maybe the last chance during this century, and perhaps the last chance ever before very, very serious calamities will take over.
1992 is to be a pivotal year in environmental action. Next year, the United Nations' second World Conference on Environment and Development will be held in Rio de Janeiro. Looking forward to that conference, Lutzenberger speaks hopefully and desperately.
What we would like to come out of it is a reappraisal of our attitudes, of our philosophy, of our economic thinking. Of course, the world is not going to change the day after, but we must set a new trend. If we really get a reversal of trends, if we can get modern industrial society to get away from its present suicidal course and begin to walk in a different direction, that would be a great thing. And then that conference would really have been the most important event in the history of mankind and in the history of life on the planet. And life is 3.5 billion years old.
In Brazil, critics say Lutzenberger is sometimes ineffective, even inept, as an administrator. They say he is too easily withdrawn from day-to-day politics of government, preferring the role of prophet. Environmentalists in Brazil and worldwide know of his prophetic ideas and his Gaia Foundation.
Gaia is the poetic name the old Greeks gave to Mother Earth. And we now use that term to designate the Earth, planet Earth, which we see as a living superorganism. Today, based on hard science, we know that the Earth has a biogeophysiology. It is, so to say, a living organism, not on the same level of a human individual or an animal that is born, lives, and dies, on a level that lasts billions of years. the Earth is the only planet that is really alive. All the other planets in our system are as dead as can be, but this planet is alive. It has even counteracted the increasing heat of the sun by storing petroleum and coal and carbonates in the ground. So it has its own metabolism. It is a living thing or a living organism. If we want to use only technical scientific language, we might say it is a homeostatic system, self-controlled and sustainable. But it is really something that we should look at with great emotion. So what we need is a Gaian worldview. We must realize that we are part of something bigger, that we humans as individuals are as cells in the tissues of a bigger living being. But today we behave in such a way that we have become a cancerous tumor. But perhaps we still have a chance if we learn to think differently, if we learn to look at the Earth as something of which we are part, like all those people whom we call primitive did in the past, but they were not primitive at all. They had a holistic view of the world. We must stop looking at the Earth as just a heap of resources that are there for the taking for whatever stupid whim of ours. The minute we realize that we are part of a bigger being, we will behave in a different way. And that is the only hope.
José Antonio Lutzenberger, Secretary for the Environment in the Brazilian administration of President Fernando Collor de Mello. He spoke to us from Estes, Colorado, there as the keynote speaker for a recent week-long National Audubon Society conference, Audubon and the Americas. Organizers of the event tell us it was the first time in the 100-year history of Audubon that a South American leader had addressed the organization. This is Bruce Robertson. Fact. The United States is one of the world's leading consumers of energy and natural resources. We are also one of the leading sources of pollution. Another fact. If we added the costs of maintaining accessible oil supplies in the Mideast, the final cost of a barrel of oil would be something like $100, more than double what it is now. Well, these and other statistics, while they shock us and hold our attention for a while, tend to overwhelm and eventually confuse us. But these are some of the ideas behind the first off-the-grid day being sponsored by the Real Goods Trading Corporation in California. John Schaefer, president of Real Goods.
We had the idea for the first National Off-the-Grid Day last January, and what we're trying to do is get as many people in the country as possible to actually shut down their breaker on their power system between high noon on August the 10th and sunset on that night. And to make it a reality, all a person has to do is actually shut down their power grid and live for 6 to 8 hours without the benefit of utility power. And we're hoping that by doing this, people will become aware as to their vulnerability to the power company and the fossil fuel-based energy economy that it represents, and that they'll understand what they're really doing when they're using the power and begin to think of ways how we can make our country less dependent on a fossil fuel-based energy system and things that we can do to relieve that strain on energy.
Schaefer at Real Goods says the ultimate would be to go off the grid and go on your own system. And someday in the future, perhaps this will be more possible for more of us. Right now, he says, it is important just to spend some time thinking about how energy gets to us now and how we would manage in the future.
Right now, the technology exists where if we were to implement all of the ideas we had, our country could save $200 billion a year instantly on our energy costs just by going through some simple measures that have been proven time and again, you know, compact fluorescent lighting and increasing the pressure in our tires, tuning up our cars, using energy-efficient shower heads. We've all read the 50 simple things that we can do, and we're trying to say, let's get into a few more complex things. Let's really change our country's dependence on this energy, which is one of the chief causes of bankrupting our economy. Looking at the hidden costs of oil and all the money that's been spent since the fall of the Shah of Iran, and what's happened since then with our deficit, sending billions and billions of dollars out of our country to support oil from foreign lands, that's totally wiping out our trade deficit, which is putting our country in serious debt, all to a large degree because we're not able to do more in generating our own energy. If, for instance, you look at in the 1980s, the two countries in the world that were most successful at cutting their energy and their energy dependence were Germany and Japan. They were able to save $50 to $100 billion apiece by putting energy, having a national energy strategy, beginning to become less dependent on fossil fuels and foreign oil. And I think it's no coincidence that those are also the two countries that were the most economically successful in the 80s.
This, Schaefer says, stands in stark contrast with the lack of such programs, policies, and commitments in the United States during this same time. Modeled after the break with England in the early days of our nation, a declaration of energy independence will be, quote, ratified, end quote, at a new energy congress to be held in Mendocino County, California, on August 9th. The declaration says, in part, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all creatures and their offspring in perpetuity are endowed equally with certain inalienable rights, that among these are clean air, fresh water, and a safe environment.
This country's energy policies have just, slapped in the face the possibility of energy conservation and really done absolutely nothing about it. And it's here we've got George Bush out there talking about more nukes and more offshore oil and increased dependence. Country is not learning, these basic lessons that are slapping us across the head with a 2x4. And it's our feeling that by increasing the country's awareness with this off the grid day, and in conjunction with that, our National Declaration of Energy Independence, that we're going to try to send a clear message to Washington that people in this country are sick of this short-sighted energy policy, and we're just not going to be dealing with it anymore. We're going to try to deliver these millions of declarations to the White House in a fleet of solar cars, and in 1992, when it will be an election year, and we feel it'll have the most impact.
Schaefer refutes the charge by skeptics that renewable energy sources are simply not practical for large-scale production at this time.
That all that's beginning to change. I think the way of thinking over the last 10 years was that solar was a pipe dream of the future. But just judging from our business has tripled every year since 1986. The number of photovoltaic solar electric modules we've sold has probably quintupled every year since 1986. Right now, we're selling on average probably 500 to 1,000 PV panels every month. We calculate that we've probably brought about 20,000 or more homes completely off the power grid with alternative energy systems and wind generators, etc. Now, of course, not everybody in the country can go off the grid. Not everyone in the country lives in a rural setting where it makes sense to put solar panels on the roof. So this is where utility companies come in. But I think for the first time, you're seeing some progressive thinking on the part of the utility companies. For instance, Pacific Gas and Electric Company, our utility out in Northern California, PG&E, has committed to getting 10% of their grid power from solar sources within 10 years by the turn of the century. So it's not just the backwoods user anymore that can use this stuff. Our sales pitch used to be, if you live more than a quarter mile from the power line, it's cheaper to hook up to solar because the utility company will charge you about $10 a foot to hook up. But that's changing now. That figure's coming down. It's probably down to 200 or 300 yards. If you look at a 30-year amortization of the cost of solar power, it's actually cheaper now if you factor in a very conservative 10% per year increase in the cost of electric power from the utility, which in our neck of the woods, it's gone up 12 to 15% every year.
Schaefer says Pacific Gas and Electric, one of the sponsors of Off the Grid Day, will be monitoring their equipment closely at 12 noon and throughout the day, providing a readout of the drop in power usage. Schaefer says this year the focus will be consumers in Northern California, but he hopes the idea will catch on around the nation. In fact, Schaefer says it is time Earth Day came into full maturity.
I think a lot of people tended to be complacent. Earth Day came and Earth Day went, and 500 million businesses got into selling shower heads and jumping on the green bandwagon, and you have Dow Chemical and Exxon all claiming to be greener than thou, and we get new products in the mail every day, the environmentally safe socks, and it tend to get a little cynical about the selling of the green movement, the hyping of the green movement. But we're trying to say, okay, Earth Day is over. Off the Grid Day is here. What can we really do now that we've done the 50 simple things? Let's get into those hundreds of more complex things that we can do to really have an effect on this country's energy policies and make a lasting effect on the planet.
John Schaefer of Real Goods Trading Corporation, we spoke to him in Ukiah, California. Real Goods has published a booklet available to tell you how to unplug and power down. We'll let you know the outcome. This is Bruce Robertson. When Nebraska Senator Bob Kerrey visited South Dakota recently, he found the issue of a proposed low-level radioactive waste dump in his state was topmost on people's minds in South Dakota. Michelle Van Manen reports.
U.S. Senator Bob Kerrey flew into Yankton, South Dakota to attend a fundraising event for the state's Democratic Party. While questions of a possible run for the presidency by Kerry led conversations, the former Nebraska governor had regional environmental concerns on his mind as well. Kerry says despite a five-state compact agreement made by state officials to develop a low-level radioactive waste dump in Boyd County, Nebraska, the presence of the facility near the South Dakota border is not at all inevitable and is still in dispute.
The problem here is, it seems to me, is we've got on the drawing boards, 11 or 12 sites, we only need three or four. And the problem, more specifically, is that we thought these compacts would be a very good way of doing business for a controversial issue like this. And with a few exceptions, it hasn't turned out to be a very good mechanism.
The proposed Boyd County facility would store waste from Louisiana, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Arkansas. The Boyd County Democratic Party has passed a resolution opposing the dump because the site is surrounded by agricultural land, wetlands, and a high groundwater table. John Smits, chairman of the Democratic Party, says despite the state's compact agreement and funds already spent, plans for the dump should be stopped now.
That ain't our fault that they went and spent a whole bunch of money steadying a place before they even asked if they could put it there.
Three or four major waste dump sites are already under construction elsewhere in the country, but are delayed while under analysis by the U.S. Department of Energy. Senator Kerry says there are nearly a dozen sites that have already created, quote, environmental horror stories, unquote. Kerry suggests the Energy Department develop a bid system for those communities willing to accept the waste. The communities would then have local control, but would operate under federal regulations for low-level nuclear waste. The senator also had advice for Northern Plains states considering accepting trash from more highly populated areas.
Avoid it at all costs, but there's a subset problem. You know, we've got, even if we can keep New Jersey and New York's garbage out of the state, which would be an attractive thing to do, we're generating our own. And I don't know what South Dakota looks like. I know what Nebraska looks like, and we've got quite a large number, over 200, I believe, right now, of landfills that don't meet anybody's standards because, in fact, they aren't regulated at all.
Kerry says the country has serious landfill and solid waste problems. John Smith says those problems should not be solved without the informed consent of the communities involved. For the High Plains News Service, I'm Michelle Van Manen.
The High Plains News Service is a production of the Western Organization of Resource Councils based in Billings, Montana. Well, that's our show for this week. We hope you enjoyed this edition of The Environment Show. Be listening next week, an international Arctic expedition to the North Pole to check for global warming and refillable beer bottles. Some of the stories we'll be covering for you next time. The Environment Show is a program about the environment, the air, water, soil, wildlife, and people of our common habitat. If you know of something happening in your area that you think we ought to know about, or if you have a question about this week's or any week's Environment Show, feel free to drop us a line. Address your questions and your comments to The Environment Show, 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, and the zip code is 12206. For a cassette copy of this program, call 1-800-767-1929. That's 1-800-767-1929. Ask for Environment Show number 83. The Environment Show is a presentation of National Productions, which is solely responsible for its contents. Dr. Alan Shartok, executive producer, and this is Bruce Robertson. The Environment Show is made possible by the J.M. Kaplan Fund of New York.